Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just 10 bucks. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. Begin year two. The headline in Europe and Bloomberg is frightening. Russian support for Putin's war in Ukraine is hardening. The growing cash pile, reads the subhead. The growing cash pile in Moscow that investors can't touch. Poland says Ukraine to get fighter jets sooner or later. Ukraine latest, Russian oil swaps at sea, backing for Putin's war. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft to guide me first to the conditions for success for either side, and then to look ahead for the second year of war. Anatole, a very good day to you. You are in the United Kingdom that is deeply involved in the Ukraine war. So is NATO, so is the European Union. The speeches by the two presidents, not meant to be dueling speeches, but that is the way it appears now afterward. The speeches laid out determination to continue the support of the war from the Russian side because NATO has attacked Russia, says Mr. Putin. From the NATO side because Russia has attacked Ukraine, which is not a member of NATO, but threatens NATO. So therefore, let us begin with Mr. Putin's speech. There was the attention to the New START Treaty, which is significant, but we're focusing on Ukraine. Your measure of Mr. Putin's speech, was it a surprise? He appeared adamant. And the headline in the European edition of Bloomberg says that if he was seeking to rally the public support, he has been successful. Good evening to you.
Hello, John. It didn't have that many surprises for me. Something which I think has not been widely noticed outside Russia is that he spent most of the speech talking about domestic issues and making commitments to support education, infrastructure, mothers, families, and so forth. And that, I think, is part of two things. The one is trying to reassure the Russian population that the war is not going to, you know, affect their living standards too badly. But the second is this line that he and the Russian government have been taking more and more, and by the way, quite a lot of Russian pundits, that Russia must now concentrate on building up its internal strength, that, you know, hopes of restoring relations with the West are over, and that Russia must therefore, you know, engage in serious internal reform and internal strengthening. Now, of course, whether the Putin regime, you know, will be able to do that with all its corruption and incompetence, and also simply the amounts of money that it's having to spend on the war, that's, you know, a very different matter. But that was the main point of his speech. And of course, the subsidiary one was so far, small escalation, but I think I did say either in an interview with you or somebody else several months ago that the first step on a Russian ladder of escalation might well be withdrawing from the nuclear arms control, which, of course, Putin has now done.
Yes, you did mention that, and here it is. I want to explore Mr. Putin's ambitions in Ukraine. It's not easy to guess ahead. However, your article in Time magazine looks at the American and NATO point of view and what success looks like. And here we have a debate which you've identified. Mr. Blinken, the Secretary of State, said most recently, and I believe it was augmented by remarks by the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Mr. Milley, General Milley, that Crimea is a red line, suggesting to Kyiv, do not attack Crimea. This would be an escalation that we're not ready to support. At the same time, the president's speech in Warsaw and his remarks in Kyiv, where he boldly traveled before the Warsaw speech, suggested support for Ukraine is not diminished, unending. So how do you put these two pieces together? No Crimea, and we support what you want, knowing that the maximalist position in Ukraine is what we hear all the time.
Yes, well, I mean, it does seem to me that the Biden administration is divided and the president has not yet made up his mind. Now, of course, as far as the Washington establishment is concerned, or most of it, this emphasis on supporting Ukraine to the end still plays pretty well. But you know, there have been indications both from various commentators within the United States, a piece by Stephen Kotkin in The New Yorker, a piece by Graham Allison in The Washington Post, I think it was, suggesting that, in fact, Crimea and perhaps the eastern Donbass are a bridge too far, because either this would require years and years and years of warfare and very high levels of US support for the Ukrainians to be able to achieve this, and they might still fail, but also because it is pretty clear that faced with the loss of Crimea, which you know would not only bring down Putin's regime but end Russia's status as a great power, as Mr. Blinken suggested, then radical Russian escalation would be very likely indeed. As to what Putin's ambitions are now, well, of course, nobody can say for sure except Putin. And, you know, even he, of course, will have to be influenced by what happens on the battlefield. I think that what one can say is that, you know, except in the extremely unlikely event of the Ukrainian armed forces collapsing and Western aid completely drying up, the Russians must now realize that they have no chance whatsoever of conquering the whole of Ukraine and overthrowing the Ukrainian government. And, you know, by withdrawing from their only bridgehead west of the Dnieper River a few weeks ago, they've acknowledged that they can't, you know, threaten to take the Ukrainian Black Sea coast. It's just not militarily possible for them. So I think that my own sense is that Putin would probably settle for the lands that Russia now holds. But, of course, Ukraine and the West are not by any means prepared to make a deal on that basis. We have to see what kind of peace plan the Chinese will come up with after their talks with Putin, because that, I think, would also be an indication of, you know, what Russia would, in the last resort, be prepared to accept. And that is going to be, you know, vastly less than than Moscow hoped for, you know, a year ago, obviously.
Looking at both sides, then, I clear away everything and look at Crimea. And I think it's important here, Anatole, to state what Crimea means to Russia. You said correctly, without Crimea, Russia ceases to be a great power. Why is that true? What is the warm weather port, and what does it mean to Moscow, and why can it not negotiate over Crimea?
Well, for two reasons, really. One is the fact that Sevastopol is the only Russian deep water port or naval base on the Black Sea. It could develop others, but it would take enormous effort. And to lose it in Crimea would basically eliminate Russia as a great power in the Black Sea, and therefore also in the entire Mediterranean. And so both in reality and symbolically, that would knock Russia, you know, out of the ranks of the great powers. I mean, it's not been a superpower since the end of the Cold War, but to lose Crimea and Sevastopol would mean that it wasn't even a second-class power. But the second set of reasons are historical, emotional, and demographic. Crimea was part of the Russian Federation until it was transferred to Ukraine in 1954. A majority of the local population, according to, you know, every independent opinion poll, wants to be part of Russia. Also, it plays a very big part in Russian and Soviet military history. There were two famous sieges of Sevastopol in the Crimean War, and then by the Germans in 1941 to 42, where there, I mean, in many ways, the image of the defense of Sevastopol ranks alongside the image of the defense of Stalingrad and Leningrad in Russian mythology. So there are, you know, there are huge, huge emotional and nationalist factors involved there. And Russians have often, you know, compared Crimea and Sevastopol to Hawaii and Pearl Harbor, and said that just as America would fight to the end, and if necessary, even use nuclear weapons to hold on to Hawaii and Pearl Harbor, so we both will and should do the same as far as Crimea is concerned.
Mr. Putin's speech identified the war start not as the February 24th launch on Kyiv by the Russian forces, but instead a war with NATO that began some years ago. So when we come back, what does that mean for the war aims of the Kremlin? What does it mean to the Russian people? Anatole Levin is the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He is in Europe. He's in the United Kingdom. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
I'm David Pogue from CBS Sunday Morning. In the new season of my podcast, Unsung Science, you'll meet the discoverers of Ernest Shackleton's shipwreck, Endurance, lost beneath the Antarctic for 100 years.
It looked like the day when it sank. It's just a very good environment down there to conserve a shipwreck.
The woman who invented forensic genealogy and has solved over 150 cold cases.
It's controversial, right? Because you never know if sitting around your Thanksgiving table, there's somebody who's been getting away with murder or rape.
And the NASA engineers who flew a helicopter on Mars.
The density is 1% that of Earth's. 1% air density. It sounds impossible, and it is almost impossible.
It's season two of Unsung Science, presented by CBS Sunday Morning and Simon & Schuster. Listen to Unsung Science on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
What happened to her, Mario? How could she simply disappear after she was with you?
I don't have answers for that.
48 Hours at CBS News present.
I'm just going to ask you straight out. Did you kill Christy Wilson?
No, I had nothing to do with her disappearance.
Another season of My Life of Crime with Erin Moriarty. Award-winning correspondent Erin Moriarty brings you face-to-face with killers.
I will never say that I'm a cold-blooded killer. I will never say I'm a murderer.
And the people they took from.
My son died running for his life.
This season, follow the evidence with Erin, beyond the speculation, including in the death of boxing legend Arturo Gatti.
My gut says I don't think he would take his life.
I know my husband killed himself.
Listen to My Life of Crime from 48 Hours on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
Experience the freedom of finding the one at Haverty's. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate this summer at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.